Let's continue hearing from Harold Drobb about Bunk Johnson.
I was tremendously impressed by what I heard.
What impressed you about what you heard?
Well, this was the answer. I think all along I'd become so in love with New Orleans music through, I would say, first the Hot Five records, but mostly, I guess, the Jelly Roll Morton, Red Hot Peppers records. And what we didn't have was a trumpet player. I mean, I really came on the scene after Tommy Ladner died. Maybe if he'd lived a little longer and been playing around, there would have been some basis for building something around him. But this guy seemed to be the answer to what I had been looking for all along. It just,
which was what, the original New Orleans?
No, it doesn't have to do anything with original or otherwise.
It was the feeling.
It was just the feeling, the sound, the way a trumpet is supposed to be played. I always thought ensemble playing was the important thing. I would rather hear George Mitchell playing with Jelly Roll Morton or the New Orleans Wanderers than Louis Armstrong with the Hot Five, because Mitchell is an ensemble player. Louis was already getting into his individualistic look at me kick, which was not staying in his role as a player in the ensemble.
Well, it seems like the two things that would have struck people as very unusual about these recordings at the time would be the intonation and the ensemble, the fact that the solos are secondary, really, to the ensemble sound.
Yeah, this is primarily ensemble music. Don't forget, too, that this is dance music. These people all thought of themselves as playing for dancers. Bunk called them dancies. And so solos are secondary. They're really not. It's not like when you're performing at a concert or in a nightclub where the audience isn't dancing. The members of the Ori band that I knew in 1947, 46 and 47 felt the same way about this, too. One of the things that was talked about was how great Bunk was as a blues player. Louis Armstrong talked about going to hear him at an after-hours place that Bunk played in, and that's all Bunk played was the blues all night. So I've included here his first recording of the blues, which was called Bunk's Blues, on this initial recording session that the Down by the Riverside came from.
Bunk's Blues, originally issued on the Jazzman label, one of the very earliest recordings made of Bunk when he was being rediscovered by collectors and jazz fans in, as this turns out, mid-1942. My guest is Harold Drobb, who has spent a lot of years thinking and working and collecting the music of and talking about the life of Bunk Johnson. It's good to have you here, Harold.
Thank you. It's my pleasure. Gene Williams was one of those from the East who came down to record Bunk. And the agreement made between the two factions was to let jazzmen put out the records because they already had a label. And that seemed a sensible thing to do. At the same time, Gene Williams had this jazz information publication that he put out. And he had put out some reissues under the Jazz Information label. So he thought he would come back to New Orleans and make some more records by Bunk and issue them on his own label. This time he was able to get a studio. I'm not sure whether it was a radio studio or what sort of a studio it was. I think he was essentially trying to get the same band together. Jim Robinson, for whatever reason, was not available. And he got another trombone player named Albert Warner, who was primarily a marching band trombonist. He was not as much of a dance band trombonist. The rhythm section was slightly different in that they had a different bass and drums. These records, as I say, are better recorded. I brought along one of them, a tune that was called Sobbin' Blues. This is a jazz tune, or it was used by jazz players through the years. This was issued as version number 2. Actually, there was another Sobbin' Blues that was at a faster tempo. One of the reasons why I brought this is Bunk creates a melody at the end in the last ensemble that's almost a completely different melody than the Sobbing Blues melody, but it's certainly a melody in and of itself, and I think it's well worth hearing. Thank you.
Bunk Johnson in 1942, recording in New Orleans after nearly a decade of retirement, Sobbin' Blues No. 2 and Bunk's Blues on Jazz Rhythm, as we rediscover Bunk Johnson with Harold Draub. I interviewed the late Mr. Draub in the early 1990s. After his rediscovery, Bunk Johnson's first sojourn from Louisiana was to San Francisco, which is not surprising. The West Coast was then already the locus of a vigorous jazz revival. Traditional jazz enthusiasts were buying records, listening to broadcasts, and dancing to bands like Lou Waters' Yerba Buena Jazz Band that were playing lively, classic jazz in the style of King Oliver, Louis Armstrong, and Jelly Roll Morton. Primed by writings, recordings, and rumors about Bunk, West Coast jazz fans anxiously awaited Bunk's arrival.
We left him in New Orleans with Sobbin' Blues. Then Rudy Blesch was giving lectures on jazz at the Museum of Modern Art here in San Francisco. And they took up some kind of contribution or whatever, subscription to bring Bunk to San Francisco, which they did in 1943. They also arranged a concert which was held at the Geary Theater here in San Francisco.
This is jazz.
They brought Kid Ory and Mutt Cary, Bud Scott, and other players up from Los Angeles.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, this music you are hearing is true hot jazz. And unless a demand is made for its revival, it may well be the last you will hear of real, honest-to-goodness jazz. For here assembled on the stage of the Geary Theater of San Francisco are eight Negro musicians, America's last practitioners of this oft-counterfeited and little-known American folk music jazz. Brought to San Francisco for this unique concert are such artists as Bunk Johnson, 63-year-old daddy of all New Orleans trumpeters and educator of Louis Armstrong, Papa Mutt Cary, equally famous New Orleans trumpeter, Edward Kid Ory, the greatest tailgate trombonist that ever lived, Bertha Gonsolin of piano fame, who studied with the great Jelly Roll Morton, Wade Whaley, Buster
Bunk
Wilson, Frank Paisley,
was given a job, a weekly playing job, at this Longshoreman's Hall on 150 Golden Gate Avenue, thanks to the effort of Harry Bridges, because he was playing with the Lou Waters remnants. At that time, Waters and Murphy and some of the others were in the service. And Murphy would come out, this was on Sunday afternoons, Murphy would come out and play with them. But Ellis Horn made a lot of these things, Burt Bales, Clancy Hayes. It was a regular, once a week, Sunday afternoon thing.
How did Harry Bridges?
Well, they had to find a place to play. And the union was segregated at that time. Actually, there was an agreement that blacks could not play on the downtown side of Van Ness Avenue, believe it or not.
Really?
They could only perform on the other side, on the west side of Van Ness. I talked to Harry Bridges himself about it because I was curious to talk to him about Bunk. And he said that when he found that out, he called up Petrillo. You know, Petrillo was the Caesar of the Musicians
AFM,
Union.
Yeah.
Yeah, the American Federation. And he said, look, he says, either you change these rulings and let these people play all over town, or I'm going to start up a rival union and put you out of business. And he says that rule went out.
That's a real threat coming from Harry Bridges.
Right, and that rule went out like that. But in any case, this was after Bunk's experience. They did somehow get permission from the union for Bunk to play with these white guys at that particular venue at that time. But eventually, the union carried on about it so much that they had to stop, and that's when Bunk left San Francisco. In any case, while this was happening, some recordings were made with these Lou Waters. I'll use Lou Waters as a cover title, although Waters himself is not involved.
Yeah, Yerba Buena.
Yerba Buena musicians. So I do have a couple of sides here from the recordings that he did with those guys. One is a recording of Down by the Riverside, another Down by the Riverside, on which Bunk sings. This is the only example of him singing, since we played the previous Down by the Riverside. There was a concert also that was given. When they made these recordings, they wanted Lottie Peavy to record some gospel songs with Bunk's band accompanying her. They actually did eventually issue two tunes where she sings and Bunk and this band accompany her.
Bunk and some of the Yerba Buena guys.
The Yerba Buena guys. But they also wanted her to sing Ain't Gonna Study War No More, you know, not Down by the Riverside that we've been as we talked about before. And she said it was not a religious song, it was a secular song, and she wasn't going to sing it. Bunk sang it just to show her that it was a religious song or whatever, not to be afraid of singing it. So that's how he wound up singing it. He sings, "Down by the Riverside, I'm going to lay my weepings down.
By the riverside, I'm going to lay my weepings down. Down by the riverside, I'm going to lay my weepings down. God knows it."
After he finished singing it, she called him on it. She said, "That's weapons, not weepins." He said, "That's what I said, weepins." Now, I don't know whether weepins was the way he pronounced weapons, or there was a double entendre here.
I've wondered about that.
I lay my weepings down.
Yeah.
As well as my weapons. But in any case, that's how he wound up making the vocal. Later on, when I recorded him, I suggested to him that he might want to sing, and he got a little disturbed with me. He says, "What makes you think that I would want to sing?" And I said, "Well, everybody else is singing. Well, just because everybody else is making a fool of himself doesn't mean I have to." Now, had I known that through the years Bill Russell had been trying to get him to sing after this Down by the Riverside had been done, I never would have mentioned it because I would have known he was already touchy about it. But I was smart enough not to say that I had heard this recording that he had made with the Yerba Buena guys. But in any case, that's unique in that it's one vocal that was done by Bunk.
God knows it. Down by the riverside, gonna lay my whipping down. Ain't gonna study war no more. I 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 ain't gonna study war no more. By the riverside, I'm gonna meet my mother dad. Oh, down by the riverside, I'm gonna meet my sister dad. God knows it. Down by the riverside, I'm gonna meet my brother dad. We ain't gonna study one no more. We ain't gonna study one no more. We ain't gonna study one no more. Ain't gonna study one no more. Ain't gonna study one more. Ain't gonna study one more. Ain't gonna study one more.
A rare vocal by Bunk Johnson on the song known both as Down by the Riverside and Ain't Gonna Study War No More, and Bunk told Drob that this was his theme song. When this series continues, we'll explore Bunk's fascinating relationships with Louis Armstrong, Sidney Bechet, and the legendary Buddy Bolden. And we'll hear more from Harold Drob, who knew him well, researched and documented in detail the life of this complex and contradictory musician, William Geary Bunk Johnson. Jazz Rhythm is produced by Rhythm Productions, providing professional sound preservation and restoration services. The Jazz Rhythm website, where you can learn more about early jazz, is jazzhot.bigstep.com.
I'm concluding this first of three programs, rediscovering Bunk Johnson, with a recording he made in San Francisco with a young enthusiast of the Yerba Buena Jazz Band. The tune dates back to Buddy Bolden and turn-of-the-century New Orleans, and was recorded in 1944 as All the Girls Go Crazy About the Way I Walk. That's Jazz Rhythm. I'm Dave Rathauer. Thanks for listening.